Your Bibles, Exodus chapter 21, Exodus chapter 21. We are going to go into, it's going to be good. And so this is, it's a long passage with the detail. And so I'm going to read through it fast, and then we're going to go slowly through it so you'll get it. And it's a simple title of the message, Judicial Instruction. This is instruction for judges in the land. This isn't instruction for people to be taking upon themselves like vigilantes, and that would never be what God intends. But this would be instruction following the moral law given on Mount Sinai that God gives Israel through Moses, additional instruction, and he begins to get into the details. And this chapter, among many, are criticized, but we're going to back up, and I think you'll see the goodness of God in this. Exodus 21, verse 1. Now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them, before the nation of Israel. If thou buy, in Hebrew, servant, and so in other translations it is translated slave. And I like the word servant here because slave has just so many connotations to it, right? That it's not what this is talking about. Let me just show you one verse so that you'll see. Look at verse 16. I'm going to, just so you get balanced. It says, and he that stealeth a man and selleth him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. That's the slavery that we are aware of. God was against that from the very beginning. So don't misunderstand that, even if you have a Bible that's not the King James. I like the word servant because I'll explain to you, we're going to go through the details, but I believe it's an indentured servant. It's a voluntary thing that they mutually enter into, and we'll show you why, all the reasons, but just relax. The world doesn't. And so, I want you to be able to just, you know, even if the world confronted you and you're like, I don't know, just know this. God's better than you. He's better than me. And that's a great starting point. Verse 2, if thou buy an Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master have given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. And if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free, then his master shall bring him unto the judges. He shall also bring him to the door, or unto the doorpost. This is at the place of decisions and judgment. And his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever, all his days. Verse 7. And if a man shall sell his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. And if she please not her master, just relax. We're going to walk through all this. Take a chill, Bill. If she please not her master who hath betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her unto a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he hath dealt deceitfully with her. And if he have betrothed her unto his son, he shall deal with her after the manner of daughters. And if he shall take him another wife, her food, her raiment, and her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. And if he do not these things, these three unto her, then shall she go out free without money. He that smiteth a man so that he die shall surely be put to death. And if a man lie not in wait, but God deliver him into his hands, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. But if a man come presumptuously upon his neighbor, we would use the word premeditated, okay, just if you want to, presumptuously is fine too, it's a good word, but we would use the word premeditated. But if a man come presumptuously upon his neighbor to slay him with guile, thou shalt take him from mine altar that he may die. Verse 15. And he that smiteth his father or his mother shall be surely put to death. I believe that's a smiting, that he would smite them to death in the context, but there can be argument with that. But he that smiteth, I don't think it's just, you know, he that smiteth his father or his mother shall be surely put to death. And he that stealeth a man and selleth him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. Verse 17. And he that curseth his father or mother shall surely be put to death. I'll just explain so you don't, your imagination. I believe this cursing would be like, I hate you! I want to kill you! And it's a threatening manner such as that. This is very, very serious stuff. And so that's the kind of issue that we have for verse 17. But I want you to understand this. It is, the Old Testament will help us understand what God thinks about sin. It's way more serious than we think. Right? And so, you know, verse 17, he that curseth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. And if men strive together and one smite another with a stone or with his fist, and he die not, but keepeth his bed, if he rise again and walk abroad upon his staff, then shall he that smote him be quit or be released. Only he shall pay for the loss of the time and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. And if a man smite his servant or his maid with a rod, and he die under his hand, he shall be surely punished. Notwithstanding, if he continue a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his money. Verse 22. If men strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart from her, what I believe that means is that she delivers the baby. Okay? If men strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart from her and yet no mischief follow, so the baby's okay. Just help you understand. That's what I think it's talking about. He's still in trouble. He shall be surely punished according to the woman's husband, as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. We'll talk all that. And if mischief follow, if something happens to the baby, then thou shalt give life for life. If the baby dies, the man should die. That's what I believe that's saying. And if any mischief follow, then shalt thou give a life for life, an eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, and foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And if a man smite the eye of his servant, the eye of his maid, that it perish, he shall let him go free for his eye's sake. And if he smite out his manservant's tooth or his maidservant's tooth, he shall let him go free for his tooth's sake. You think that's silly. I think it's amazing. We're going to talk about that. Verse 28. And if an ox gore a man or a woman that they die, then the ox shall be surely stoned, and his flesh shall not be eaten, and the owner of the ox shall be quit, shall be released. But if the ox were wont, or this is a pattern, this ox, but if the ox were wont to push with his horn in time past, and it hath been testified to his owner, and he hath not kept him in, but that he failed, but that he hath killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and his owner also shall be put to death. If there be laid on him a sum of money, then he shall give for the ransom of his life whatsoever is laid upon him. Whether he have gored a son or have gored a daughter, according to this judgment shall it be done unto him. If the ox push a manservant or a maidservant, but shall give, he shall give unto their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. I'll make this comment because I'm always running out of time, but is that interesting that that's what Jesus was betrayed for? 30 pieces of silver? The value of a servant. That's what Judas betrayed Jesus for. Some 1,500 years later, so the value of silver would have, you know, increased but decreased in value. Verse 33, and if a man shall open a pit, or if a man shall dig a pit, and not cover it, and an ox or an ass fall therein, the owner of the pit shall make it good and give money unto the owner of them, and the dead beast shall be his. Now, I've just got a little pause here. Is Vincent in here tonight? There you are, Vincent. When I read this, I thought about you. So I won't remember this. Because I know you're famous for digging holes in your yard. God says you're going to be responsible for that hole if somebody's donkey, somebody's animal breaks their leg in that. So fill the hole, Vincent. Fill the hole. Anyway, I thought, is he still digging holes? Still digging holes. Be careful if you're creeping on Zach and Lauren at night. There's a lot of holes in their backyard. I would not recommend that you creep on them anyway, but look at verse 33 and 34. Vincent, this is for you tonight. And if a man shall open a pit, or if a man shall dig a pit and not cover it, and an ox or an ass fall therein, the owner of the pit, that's you, Zach, shall make it good and give money unto the owner of them, and the dead beast shall be his. Verse 35. And if one man's ox hurt another man's, that he die, so that one man's ox kills another man's ox, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money of it. And the dead ox also they shall divide. Or if it be known that the ox hath used to push in time past, and his owner hath not kept him in, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead shall be his own. I think we're going to enjoy this, at least I will, and I pray you'll hang in there, because it really helps us understand God's perspective on sin. But it also, this is God caring for people, not to leave us aimless, not to leave us to our own devices. And if you really can step back and grasp what God's doing, he's caring for people. He's giving instruction that had never been in existence before. If you had a servant and there was sinful slavery going on throughout all of history, if you ever hear this, calm down, because I do, I'm like, pfft. And people go, well, you know, the cause of slavery is the Bible. And I'm like, don't say this, but my ghost in my mind is, are you that stupid? You understand the Bible was given 2,500 years after history, the beginning, the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. There had been so much sin and evil and that God brought a flood 1,000 years before this. Yeah, kind of. Let me see. Yeah, 1,000 years before this, give or take. And it is, so the Bible's not the cause of slavery. I will tell you this, where true Christianity is, people are liberated. Now, to be clear, history has Christians participating in evil. They were wrong. And I don't know, you know, I pray that it wasn't the predominance of Christianity that participated in the kidnapping and selling of people. That's always been evil. That's always been wrong. But I just tell you that God lays out instruction that for the first time in history cared for the people that nobody else cared for. That when you see this in the Bible, God cares, you know, always four groups of people that he cares for especially, right? The fatherless, the widows, the poor, and the stranger, okay? And in this instance, he cares for the people that would have been easily abused. And he sets up instruction so that the abuse would not continue. And so tonight I really just have three thoughts. And so, but it's law concerning indentured servants. Law concerning servants. I put the word indentured there. So is that your papa? Ah, okay, very good. So I say law concerning indentured servants. Those, we'll talk about that. But let's just look at verse 2. Look at this. If thou buy an Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. I want you to remember this. This doesn't violate verse 16, and he that stealeth a man and selleth him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. It was either the buying or the selling of people was wrong in that sense. This is indentured servanthood, right? And I want to just walk you through a few things. There's principles of some indentured servanthood I want you to see. This would be that people would sell themselves and their labor and their skill to people. And it would be for a certain period of time. If it was a Hebrew servant, it would be for a period of 6 years, and on the seventh they would be released. We dealt with some of that jubilee, which is 50 years, but it's still that God had a release. So if you were to, so let me just walk you through this. It was chosen or mutually arranged. This was not something that was forced upon them, okay? It was a limited duration. And so anytime you see this, there was a prescribed time period. Now, the one man, you'll see, he committed to his master, he committed to his owner for life, and he bore that sign in his ear. Limited duration, highly regulated by God. God's going to give principles that say, you need to take care of people. They're not second-class citizens. And so I want to show you this. There's four reasons that people would become indentured servants. Just for sake of time, I'll give you the scriptures. I have the scriptures that you can refer to. Extreme poverty, one might sell his liberty. And so if you want, I'll just give you the passages. In fact, I'll read it. Leviticus 25, verse 39 and 40. So you can write that down. It says, and if thy brother dwelleth by thee, and if thy brother that dwelleth by thee be waxen poor and be sold unto thee, thou shalt not compel him to serve as a bondservant, but as an hired servant, as a sojourner, he shall be with thee and shall serve thee unto the year of Jubilee. And so this would be somebody that's just poverty stricken, and they'll say, you know what, I'll work for you. I will become your servant, and they would then receive wages, right? We might call that an employee today, but extreme poverty, marriage arrangement, we'll see that. And so, you know, many of our girls are thankful that culture doesn't exist today, but it existed in yesteryear, and God set up principles to take care of the young ladies. You're going to see that. You see, God put instruction in the Bible for kings. And he said, never have a king. But he said, I know you, so I'm going to give you instruction. When you do rebel against me and have a king, this is the instruction for the kings. God has to give instruction for when you do these things, you better not cross this line. You follow me? It's not, he knows us. And he's saying, if you do this, then, so marriage arrangement could be indentured servanthood, right? It could be debt. It could be debt, right? You'll see this. Let me just, 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 1, just listen. It says, now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elijah, saying, thy servant, my husband, is dead. So one of the servants of Elisha died. And thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord, and the creditor is come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen. So in history past, what would happen is if you owed, and you had boys in particular, and just those that could be laborers, and it could be maid servants as well, they would take your sons as payment for that debt. And usually the dishonest world would rip you off, and you'd probably never see your sons again. And so she entreated Elisha with that. But people would do that to pay off their debt. And they would, again, remember the principles. They would do that mutually, not forced. You follow me? So when you see this, and if in other versions you see slave, don't take into account the against people's will that is evil and has been evil throughout the centuries. You understand this as well. The slavery that we're against and we hate and that America was a great participant in, it's more prevalent today than ever in history. Do you understand that? There's 8 billion people in the world, and there's more people today under slavery against their will than ever in the history of mankind. You do know that. That is reality. Oh, it's hidden, not spoken of. It's prevalent in Asia, Africa, and in Eastern Europe in abundance. One of the preachers over in South Africa, he was enslaved until a high school principal rescued him. Lubavalo is his name. If you saw him without a shirt, you would see the beatings on his back. You ever seen that in movies, you know, where they kind of have those stripes on them? Oh, he had them. His owner would beat him unconscious. This was 10 years ago. It's not uncommon. Evil. Wrong for anybody to be involved with. And so that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, arrangements that God's giving them instruction how to then not abuse people in these situations, right? Because when are people typically abused? When they're poor? Yep. Because usually what comes with poverty is less education, so we take advantage of them. Hopefully we don't. God takes that very personal. But isn't that what the world does? You see check cashing places? That's not for the rich. That's to rip off the poor. The interest rates on those, what they charge, is usury, evil, and wicked. I knew a Christian that was a software programmer. He had to stop. He got under conviction that said, I can't work for these check cashing places because I'm helping them be efficient and rip off poor people. Evil. I loved his conviction, and I think he was right. We can't just work anywhere. Do you understand that? It matters what we, you say, oh, somebody else will do it. Let somebody else do it. We ought not to be involved with it. So, and then fourth, a thief can't pay restitution. It's just one chapter over. Look at Leviticus, Exodus chapter 22, verse 3. Look at verse 2. Look at verse 2. We'll start there. We can start at verse 1. If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep or and kill it and sell it, he shall restore five oxen for an ox and four sheep for a sheep. God gives very specific. And if the thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he die, there shall no blood be shed for him. God talks about, you know, it's like, you know, self-defense. If the sun be risen upon him, there shall be blood shed for him, for he should make full restitution. So if he lives, he shall make full restitution. If he have nothing, he can't make restitution, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, whether it be ox or ass or sheep, he shall restore double. So it's if you were caught, you would be sold, and the proceeds from the selling of your servanthood would be given to the person that you stole from. And that would be, you could argue that this is, that's one example of against their will, but they broke the law. Follow me? And so I tell you this, when we see this servanthood, I want you to understand this. Now let's just walk through this. Let's just walk through and understand the scripture. So look at this, verse 2. If thou buy an Hebrew servant, so the buying is someone has sold their services in order to cover debt, sold their talents and their services in order to do that. And if you buy a Hebrew servant, so, you know, somebody says, you know, hey, I need debt, so I'll work for you. I'm gonna become your servant. For a Hebrew servant, it was limited to 6 years. 6 years he shall serve, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. See, God all of a sudden provides parameters and care for people. And so it's interesting, verse 3, if he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. So what he brings in, he leaves with. Now this verse, interesting, this was well known. It's not like it was hidden. If the master had given him a wife, so the guy comes in. Whoa! She's looking good. And he gets married to a servant of the owner that then would have their own contractual agreement for whatever period of time. You follow me? Not against their will. I can't find that in the scriptures. And he marries the girl, and they have sons or daughters. The wife and her children shall be her masters and shall go out by himself. You listen to this. It's God just trying to make everything balanced. You go in, you know this. Otherwise, here would be the situation. God's just, he thinks about all things, and you may not agree with how he thinks on this. It's like this. You could come in and say, hey, I'll marry you, and I've only got 2 years left, and then I'll take you out with me, and then you're free of your contract. God said, no. You came in, and if you marry her, you can't take her or the children, but you know, I think it would be a great idea if you stayed with her, but then you're committed to the owner for life. You follow me? So look at verse 4. If a master have given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her masters, and he shall go out by himself. But, and if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife and my children, I will not go out free. Then his master shall bring him unto the judges. Going to make it very public. It's a public agreement. He shall also bring him to the door and into the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. So it would be in your, most like an earlobe, and the awl would be similar to a spike. You understand this. James chapter 1, I've got these verses down here. James chapter 1, James, a servant of God, that word means bondslave. Romans chapter 1, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, that word means bondslave. You understand this. That's what we become when we're saved. We become bond servants of Christ. He becomes our master. He becomes our Lord. And you see this. Verse 5, and if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, I will not go free. I will surrender in faith to my master. And I'm his. Do you see the look at the terminology? Verse, end of verse 6, and he shall serve him forever. It's an incredible picture of salvation. That, you know, it's a surrender to the master, and we'll serve him forever. And that's the great privilege of life. Now look at verse 7. So all I'm telling you is this is a man that comes in and he sells his services, becomes a servant. And if he marries a wife and she has children, then he has a decision. I'll either leave with what I came in with, or if I want to stay with my wife and children, which he should, then he becomes a servant for life to that owner. You follow me? Again, it's interesting that it's his choice. And you say, I don't like the choice, and I'm not super comfortable with it either. But it's sort of interesting that God enables everyone to believe. And you can walk away from Christ. Very similar. Verse 7. And if a man sell his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. Now, this will throw us for a loop, right? So this would happen in yesteryear. Parents would get together. You know, I won't. You know, like the Tilleries and the Minchers, they like their families, and they're like, you know, oh, should I name somebody else? Who would it be? Who would the other families like me to name? And they're like, you know, I've been watching your kids, and she's going to die when I say this. We would like Isabella. She knew it was happening too, didn't you? You knew. You're just like, what are you doing? We would like Isabella to become part of our family. And you know, Isabella's not ready to be married yet, but here, we're going to give you, you know, $1,000. There you go. And it's our commitment, and we want to bring Isabella into our family, and you'll become part of the family, and we're gonna you know, just love on her as a daughter, and it could be, you know, at Isabella's age, it would be for some young man, you know. Illustrations come through my mind. I would destroy people in this church if I did that. Stop, Steve. I'm not going there. All right, I'm not. I promise. It went through my mind, and it didn't before this, okay? So, I'm not. So, I've lost my train of thought now. And so, what would happen is it's not the way we do things today, but there is a godliness in that. I know that sounds crazy to some of you, and I do love the, you know, but the way we find spouses today is a lot crazier, in my opinion. Ah. And they never look the way they are on the screen. And their resume isn't nearly as awesome as they want it to be. And you make decisions that way, it'd be good if you could observe people, right? And so that's how they would do it. So I want you to go back to verse 7. This is what this is talking about. And if a man sell his daughter to be a maidservant, so it would be, I said the Tilleries and the Minchers. So Randall and his family give Stephen $10,000. Make it good. $100,000. And Isabella's moving. Becomes part of the family, and she is with the plan to marry somebody in the family, and so if a man sell his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do, and if she please not her master. So, you know, Isabella goes and lives with the Minchers, and they're like, whoa, Isabella's not what we thought she was. Okay? Would you forgive me? Yeah, you're like, probably not. Right? And if she pleased not her master, so this would be in the case if a dad takes money to have his daughter to be the man's wife, and if she pleased not her master, there's been no consummation of the relationship, none of that, so don't go there. Right? And he's also, I'm like, I don't think so. Right? And if she pleased not her master who hath betrothed her to himself, this would be if a master, the owner says, oh, I want this woman to be my wife, and then he shall let her be redeemed. This is interesting, right? He'll let her be redeemed. The dad could give the money back, and Isabella could return to the family. That would be the redemption of that. You follow me? So look at verse 8. And if she pleased not her master, they're like, Isabella's a dud. Who hath betrothed her to be him to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her unto a strange nation, he shall have no power. No. This is the goodness of God, because this is what they would do. This is what they would do. They got $10,000 from Stephen, and they're like, $1,500 right here, you can have her. You'd make $11,500. God says, you're not allowed to do that. We don't play games like that. You follow me? This is God protecting this situation. And thank you for the illustration. But it's, so look at verse 8. If she pleased not her master, who hath betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He's not allowed to sell her into a strange nation. He shall have no power, seeing he hath dealt deceitfully with her. He brought her in to marry her, and then he decides, no, he's not ruining her life. Do you love the care that God has for people in this situation? I know you're like, yeah, but look, God's giving instruction, and if he didn't give instruction, it's going to happen. And so he says, you do this, and we don't do that today. And you're like, I'm so thankful, right? That you've got to understand. Do you see how this plays in with 1 Corinthians 7 with kind of the authority of a parent in 1 Corinthians 7? That ain't nothing compared to Exodus 21, is it? You're like, and you were like, I'm comfortable with 1 Corinthians 7. So look at verse 8. If she pleased not her master who hath betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed to sell her unto a strange nation. He shall have no power, seeing he hath dealt deceitfully with her. And if he hath betrothed her unto his son, so brings Isabella in for their son, he shall deal with her after the manner of daughter. She should treat her like a daughter. Right? And if her son's like, Dad, told you not to buy Isabella. Leave the illustration alone, Steve. And then he says this, if he take him another wife, so his son takes another wife, the dad, her food, her raiment, and her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. He's going to treat her like a daughter, and he's going to make sure that he takes care of her, and by God's grace finds her a man that will love her and support her and take care of her. So it's his new daughter. Follow me? That's the Bible. You say, I don't like that. This is God actually giving instruction where there was no instruction and people abused the situation. You follow me? I know, you're super uncomfortable with it, but we don't. This is the culture that exists, and God gave instruction how to care for that. And it says this, and if he do not these three, so if the dad says, you know what? I'm not taking care of you, Isabella. Free to go home. He says, and if you do not these three unto her, then she shall go out free without money. You don't have to repay, Randall. You get to go home, Randall. Didn't take care of you with food, with clothing, and as his own daughter. Guys, I know you're uncomfortable with this, but when you just take your time and slow down, I want you to talk about this. This is the goodness of God that takes care of people in a world that is abusing people. You follow me? And the people that are abused are the poor, are typically, the women historically. Women aren't less than men when I say that. It's that historically, men have been the power brokers, and they've abused their position of power and authority, and they abuse the poor, they abuse the weak, they abuse women, they abuse children, and all the above, right? And God says, it's not right. So, That's everything I wanted to say about laws concerning indentured servants. Oh, there's more to come in future weeks. And so, what did I also want to say? That's good. That's good. Now then, secondly, laws concerning murder, manslaughter, and violence. So for my front row scholars, manslaughter would be the death of someone unintentional. Okay, so you ever hear of vehicular homicide or vehicular manslaughter? It's you drive your car and you kill somebody you didn't intend to, but if you are in the wrong, you are going to be in trouble. Not the same as premeditated murder, but much of our laws are rooted in the Bible. It's called Lex Rex. It's from the Bible, right? So God gives instruction. Now, let's just look at these instructions as well. Now, I want to take you one more thing, just on the slavery thing. Look back to Exodus chapter 20. I want to show you this. And I want to show you, you know, for anybody that says, oh, the Bible's the cause of slavery. Look at Exodus chapter 20, verse 2. When the Lord gives them the Ten Commandments, he says, I am the Lord thy God, which hath brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. He brought them out of 400 years of slavery that was involuntary, that was against their will, and God hates all that, has always hated that. You understand that? And so he told them that one chapter before he gives instruction of people that voluntarily put themselves in under the ownership of others in order to benefit financially. Now verse 12. He that smiteth a man so that he die shall surely be put to death. I want you to understand this. This whole chapter, if you summed it up, now I've been going into the details because I think it's important. This whole chapter is about justice and responsibility. God says justice. When he says an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and you know, burning for burning, all of that, he's giving mankind instruction that says this. The punishment should fit the crime. Parents, you should have that same thought. Don't overreact and overpunish your children. It should fit the crime. So, for example, if you say, hey, I don't want you playing video games. If you find them playing video games, say, well, no video games for 12 months. I would be fine with that. You say, oh, that's extreme. Trust me, I did that with my son. He thanks me to this day. He said, Dad, thank you for stopping me playing video games. Because I told him, I said, you play when I tell you you can play. So we play Tiger Woods golf. He'd be like, it's okay now. And but it's, you know, he so wanted that. And I said, oh, no, you're not getting that. And so you follow me? It's justice and responsibility. And God says this, if you do something, you need to take responsibility for it. And that's just so right. And throughout history, and still today, it's whoever has the most money, right? But God lays this out, and he says, if you kill somebody, you should have your life taken. Again, that's nationally. That's not that if somebody were to kill one of my loved ones, that I then have the right to go kill them. That's wrong. When the Bible says thou shalt not kill, it's talking about murder. But when you deal with governments were put in place, and God's giving instruction here, for the benefit of mankind, so that there's a deterrent, and God says this, you kill somebody, you should die, and that's at the hand of the judges, at the hand of the government. You follow me? That's the principle of God's word. God hates death. God hates sin, but he is dealing with a sin-cursed world and giving us instruction. Now, I want to tell you this. I don't think you have to have capital punishment in order to be right before God as a nation. I will tell you, when we don't listen to God, it's probably a bad idea. You follow me? Listening to God would usually be good. If I were the president of the United States and I could do that, I would capital punishment. Now, you're going to see a theme here, and I'm not going to get through all this. Just a bummer. The theme is this. Did you notice sometimes when you're reading this, you thought at times, maybe you didn't, because I've listened to this now probably 40 times, so I'm like, I got this, right? This is the first time you listen to it. There's times where you think, I don't think that was a tough enough punishment. Did any of you think that when he was going through this? Anybody? Thank you. So here's the point, Randall. It's the same thought we have in our laws today, that we'd rather someone that's guilty be loosed than someone that's not guilty be punished. It's very interesting, right? And God in his brilliance deals with a lot of this, but if you kill somebody, then your life should be taken. Now look at this, verse 13. It gives an exception. And if a man lay not in wait, he's not trying to kill it. There was no premeditation. There was no presumption. But God delivered him into his hand. It's like this. It's like, whoa, you know, it's like, and when it says God delivered him into his hand, God takes ownership for all. He said, then I'll appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. God gives greater instruction for the city of refuge. And it's really, he gives instruction like, poing, if you have an axe and wah, your axe head flies off and kills Damien, right? Then, you know, Liz will be going to, you know, the government and saying, Steve Hall needs to die. And I'll be like, I didn't mean to. And there's seven cities. I run to the city of refuge and I'm safe there because it was an accident and they'll have a trial and all that, right? Didn't mean to. But I should have taken care of my axe head, shouldn't I have? Made sure it was secure. But I didn't, so I have responsibility for you, but not the same as cold-blooded murder. But what I have to do is I have to live in the city of refuge. And if I come outside the city of refuge, you're allowed to kill me. Interesting, right? I'm not going to go into that. When we get to the city of refuges, we'll have a great time. But that's what he talks about. Look at verse 18. And if a man lay not in wait, but God deliver him in his hand, then I will appoint thee a place where he shall flee. Those are the city of refuge. Now he said, but if a man come presumptuously, this would be premeditated, upon his neighbor to slay him with guile, trickery, thou shalt take him from mine altar that he may die. So historically that, you know, there'd be altars with all kinds of false religions. So, you know, it's sort of like this. Does anybody play hide and seek anymore? You know, it'd be like, you do play hide and seek. Now, what do you guys call it now? Do you call it base where you're safe? What do you call it? What do you call it when you're safe? Like, yeah, base. Hey, you can't touch me. I said, hey, you know, remember that when you play hide and seek? So, you know, be like, you'd go 5 feet away and they'd be like, you know, hey, you can't be hanging around base. Well, they would do that with altars. They would be like, God said, you know what? No altar will save them when they've done it presumptuously with guile. Pull them off the altar. They must die. No base. When you've done this in cold-blooded murder. Verse 15, he that smiteth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. And you know, let's just, there is a hierarchy that God says this, honor thy father and thy mother. And so it could be that it's that serious. But again, the parents didn't have authority to go, you hit me, that's Old Yeller stuff. No, that's not. You know, Old Yeller, you may not know that they put him down at the end of the movie. So if you haven't seen Old Yeller, I just ruined it for you. But parents didn't have the authority to take their children's life. That's in Deuteronomy. You must bring it before the magistrates and the judges, and they would adjudicate and do all this, right? It's not the wild, wild west. But it does say this. There is a hierarchy of respecting your family and your parents. But I think in this context, if you kill your father and mother, you will die. Look at verse 16, we've talked that. Verse 17, we've talked that. Verse 18, and if men strive together, now this is two guys, you know, it's like, Damien! We start duking it out, right? Duking it out. One punch, Damien's down. No, why is that so important for me to say, right? Had a guy one time tell me, I don't think I've told this from the pulpit. He told me, he said, you know that last Bible study we had? He said, I almost decked you. I said, you know what would have been embarrassing? That you'd have been whooped by a Baptist preacher. why was that important, you know? But I probably said, you know, but don't want to be a brawler. But if Damien and I got into a fight, right? And he said, if men strive together and one smite another with a stone or with his fist, and he doesn't die, but he keepeth his bed. So throw a rock at him. That's called sin. We ought not to do that. But he doesn't die. God takes care of restitution. You got to understand this. I'm responsible. And God didn't say, who started it? I had not to ever get into a fight with you. Imagine, you know, in Israel, you're my brother, fellow Israelite. You're my brother in Christ. There's nothing Nothing that should ever have me bust you in the chops. Thought about it, no, but nothing. You understand this? You're my brother. And so, but if we do, and one of us is hurt, the one that hurts the other, and God doesn't even worry about whose fault it is, you hurt him, you're going to pay for his lost time, his lost wages, and for his medical expenses. That's the Bible. Look at this. That's what it says. Look, and if men strive together and one smite another with a stone or with his fist, or he die not, but keepeth his bed, if he rise again and walk abroad upon his staff, then shall he that smote him be quit. You're free. You're not going to go to jail. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. You're going to pay for that as well. Now then, verse 20, if a man smite his servant or his maid with a rod and he die under his hand, he shall be surely punished. Now understand this. God is dealing with this. He's not saying it's okay to smite your servant with the rod. He just knows this happens. He says, if you do this and they die, you're going to be surely punished. Notwithstanding, if you continue a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his money. And so the whole thought there is, if he lives a day or two, you weren't trying to kill him. I want to tell you this. This doesn't mean God approves of that, but he's giving instruction to say, if you do this, and you know this, what are the pictures that we have? I told you, Lubavalo, right? The stripes on his back, the abuse. That's all that we think about with the slavery that we're familiar with, right? Wrong and sin ought not to be. And God's putting instructions to say, you do that and they die, you're going to be punished. And so, then verse 22, if men strive and hurt a woman with child. Do you have terminology of the Bible? It doesn't say if men strive and hurt a woman with clumps of cells. If men strive and hurt a woman with a fetus. You know what fetus just means? It means, just went blank. It means, somebody help me. It means human or something. I mean, Google it. Somebody Google it for me. Randall, you Google it. You got to Google it. Fetus, it means human being or something. But we come up with a word that makes us think it's not human. You follow me? And so he says this. If a man strive with a woman that's with child, it's a child in her womb. That's why I'm pro-life in every situation. He says this. And so that her fruit depart from her, so that, boom, kicks her into labor, boom, she has the baby, yet no mischief follows. He's in trouble. He shall surely be punished. And the husband gets some say in this, and he shall surely be punished according to as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judge determines. So the husband gets, what does it mean? Offspring is the word I was looking for. Bang, couldn't think of it. Fetus means offspring of a human. You know, we think, oh, that's some special word that means they're not human. No. And so this is dealing with the unborn child. And I told you this already, verse 23, and if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give life for life. If that baby dies, then that person that caused the issue will die. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound. Now, quickly, in 2 minutes, we're going to finish this. Verse 26, and if a man smite his servant to where point, I lost an eye. You're free. And then God says, lose a tooth. I'd probably be like this with my servant. Hey, man, come on now. Oh, but he decks me like, you know, like, got a loose one. hey, boss. You're a jerk. You got to understand the point. Here's the point. Here's the point of the Bible. Clay, if you lose a tooth, is that a big deal? Not really. God says this. Your servants aren't for you to abuse. They lose a tooth, you lose them. You see, that's care for servants that nobody else ever showed. See, God's not advocating this. He's just dealing with the sinful depravity of man and saying this. You know what? They are not your property to abuse. You follow me? And just for a tooth, they're free. Lose an eye, that's a big deal. But then he gives this. He says, you lose a tooth. And then finally, I'm just going to sum up this, 30 seconds. Animals, not that big a deal. You know my thoughts of animals. But here's the, I love them. They are delicious. Medium is my preference. But so when you think about animals, you own animals, oxen, they're your responsibility. And so here's some principles. I'll just sum this up. So if you have an ox, and the ox goes and kills somebody, and this is still done today, when an animal kills a human, they're always put down. It comes from the Bible. And God said, if that animal kills somebody, they're going to be put down. Let me tell you, though, he says this. If that ox, that ox was known to have been doing this before, and he was told, and he didn't make sure that ox would never do this again, the ox will die and he will die. Responsibility. God says you are responsible for your life, and life matters. He cares for the servants. He cares for the lowly. He cares for the babies. He cares for them all. And we had better not abuse God's creation. You follow me? That's a simple message of this. But this is criticized because people try to take this chapter, and if you don't dissect it slowly, and they say God's pro-slavery. He's not. And they don't even read the whole chapter, right? When people ask you questions and they attack the Bible, just say, what chapter is that? And let's just go read that. Just read it in greater context and say, well, let's just read it, see what it says. And I tell you this, that the whole principle is take responsibility for your life. God cares for all of it. And if your animals, and so then I love this, it's just good. He says, if your animal kills somebody's animal, I'm not worried whose animal was at fault. Then what you do is you split the dead animal between you and you sell the live animal and split the proceeds. Unless your animal was known to be, you know, goring people before, right? Then he says this, no, you will restore him a brand new ox because you should have taken care of your ox. You got some wild ox, keep him in the pen. You just got to love this. Dig a hole. Take responsibility for your stinking hole that you dig. Right? I was sneaking around your house the other night. I wasn't. And tripped, man, fell in some hole. I'm going to own your house, Zach. I'm going to own your house. And I'm going to use Exodus 21 as my basis for Souder Construction. Now it's Hall Construction. I want you to see this. Take your time with the Bible. In everything about God, He is good. There are tough passages in the Bible. Study it. God hates sin. Let's pray.